Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Tuesday, January 14th, and we are continuing our discussion on the fifth commandment this week. Good conversation. You shall not murder. What does this mean? We should fear and love God so that we do not hurt or harm our neighbor in his body, but help and support him in every physical need. So we're going to get into that conversation today. We're talking about life issues and a number of issues related to that fifth commandment. We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting the program. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for that sponsor section, and you'll find the CUW logo in there. Click on that. That'll take you to their page. Find out about all the programs they have to offer and the locations where they're available as well. Not just in Wisconsin. They're all over the place. So go check it out, kfuo.org. If you have a question for our guest today, you can give us a call in the studio. The number is 314-821-0850, or you can email your questions to family@kfuo.org. We'd be glad to take your questions and try to address them during the next hour. I know we've got a lot to cover in the next hour, but we'll try to fit it all in. We have some great guests lined up for today. Very special day, actually, for us here in the studio. Joining us in the studio this morning is Maggie Karner, Director of Life and Health Ministries with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. I know you're one of those deployed staff that run all over the country, and so we try to snag some time with you when you're here in St. Louis. So good to have you in the studio. Also joining us by phone this morning is Carol Tobias. She is president of the National Right to Life Committee. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Andy.
So,
hi, Maggie.
Hi, Carol.
Now, you guys work together quite a bit on a number of things, and do you ever get to see each other face-to-face, Carol?
Oh, maybe, once a year, maybe twice a year?
Yeah.
So most of your reunions are like this on the phone? Or
virtual.
Virtual, yeah. Not a lot on the air yet, huh?
This is a first.
Well, Carol, tell us a little bit about the National Right to Life Committee. You serve as the president of the NRLC. What is the National Right to Life Committee?
National Right to Life is the largest and oldest pro-life organization in the country. We were started in 1968. At that time, some very visionary people started to notice that abortion was becoming a real threat. Unborn children's lives were being threatened by state legislation, so they started gathering people from around the country to see what we can do to organize to face the threat. We have an affiliate in each of the 50 states with about 3,000 local chapters, and our goal, our mission, is to defend human life. The Declaration of Independence says that we are all created equal and that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and life was the first right mentioned. But unborn children are losing their lives to abortion. Unfortunately, babies that are born with severe disabilities are sometimes left to die because of that disability. We have elderly people, disabled people who are being starved to death or being denied medical treatment because someone has decided that their life is no longer valuable. So our goal is to defend life and to just try to restore the sanctity of life, that just because we are human beings created by God, we have that right to life, and we are valuable and precious, and that life should be protected.
And there are many organizations that that work for that cause, that life should be protected. We value life for various reasons. As Lutherans, we value life because God values life, because He created it. It's His gift. And so I know that that you work with a number of organizations, I'm sure, at partnering with a number of organizations. And Maggie's here today. We were able to get her in the studio for a little bit. I know she's got to run off to a meeting soon. But Maggie, how do you work together with the NRLC? Obviously, you're working towards similar goals. How does Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Life and Health Ministries work together with organizations like the NRLC?
Well, we partner with a lot of different organizations. Probably our closest partner in our work amongst Lutheran churches is the Lutherans for Life organization, and we work very cohesively and closely together. We try not to duplicate services or reinvent the wheel if mm-hmm. somebody's already doing something. But we work with organizations like the National Right to Life Committee and other pro-life organizations. It's very important. There's a history in the pro-life community that we all work very cohesively together because there's so many areas of attack in our secular culture now, where mm-hmm. life is being attacked, that we all need to man all the battle stations in every state and all the way across the nation. And if we can work closely together and communicate, there are a number of forums where we do that quite well. There's forums in Washington, D.C. that we most of us all participate in and network together. We're also, the LCMS is a member of the National Pro-Life Religious Council. And we meet in Washington, D.C., in the offices of the National Right to Life Committee. They're gracious enough to host us there. So there's a really a charitable working relationship among us all, because we understand that it takes every person to get the message out.
And that, taking that time to understand what each organization is doing. So as you said earlier, not reinventing the wheel, so that we can all work toward this common goal.
Right. Everyone kind of mm-hmm. has their own little niche of work mm-hmm. that we do. I can say that I'm really happy that I will be able to work even more closely with Carol here in the months and years to come, as she is an LCMS Lutheran. Yay. And so we're happy to, we've invited her to join us in service on our National Sanctity of Human Life Committee for the LCMS. And she's agreed to volunteer in that capacity. And it's going to be wonderful, Carol, to have you on board with us, so that we can be even more in the know about what your organization is doing, and we can kind of share our messaging together.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. We've got a meeting coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah, I'll see you.
Yes, it'll be great.
Carol, from your perspective, how important is collaboration like this in order, for the sake of the cause, for the sake of protecting life in this country?
Oh, I think it's crucial, especially reaching out into individual churches, religions, denominations. You know, we try to work in a lot of different areas, like we've got 3,000 chapters, but nothing can be as effective as someone who can walk into their own church and say, you know, we need to do something. We need to educate our people. We need to help women that are facing the problem pregnancy. When different people are involved and different groups are involved, we can just penetrate into society deeper than is possible by one person or one group.
Very good. Maggie, you're nodding your head. This collaboration is crucial, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I think as Lutherans, we are able to distinguish between different target audiences. And Luther had this doctrine of the two kingdoms in society, where we have our vocation as civic servants in the secular world. We're all, you know, we register to vote and we're involved in the public sector and mm-hmm. the public square. But we also have our first vocation is in the family of God. And so those two areas of our Christian and our secular life, this is an area, the area of life ministries, the life issues, encompasses both of those. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes in the church, I hear the argument that, why are we talking about political issues? You know, this is just, you know, it's something that's in the news. I hear it, you know, they're trying to, you know, make legislation about this or that. And I firmly, yes, it is a political issue. But first and foremost, it is a moral and a spiritual issue. And so it's absolutely something that needs to be addressed in every congregation and from the church, the voice of the church itself. And this is why it's important that the LCMS is very vocal about this issue. When I say it's a spiritual issue, it's because I can give you an example. You know, of course, it's a moral issue, but it can prevent or hinder someone from actually understanding the depth of the gospel. I talk to post-abortive women who have had abortions and regret that decision and are grieving because of it, and literally they cannot grasp the depth of the gospel because Satan has perverted their understanding. And so if we don't talk about this in our churches for them to hear that glorious grace of the gospel, I had one woman tell me that, you know, I'm in church every Sunday. I hear the pastor talk about, you know, confession and absolution, but he doesn't mean it's for me. If he really knew what I did, he wouldn't forgive me. And we have to make sure that we understand that we preach this, that we do, that the gospel is for everyone. I had one woman tell me that my sin is so bad of abortion that my pastor won't even mention it. And yet she's desperately grasping for the gospel. And so this is the function of it in the church. Carol's primary function is in that, in the public square, and they do this amazing job of getting the word out in the public square, whereas our focus is more of in the church, and making sure our people in our pews and their families, and make sure that life is upheld across the board, an ethic of life.
So true. Very good. It's nice to see this kind of collaboration, and you've done a nice job of painting that picture to help us understand the public square, how it's a spiritual issue and a moral issue as well. Thanks for helping us understand that. Maggie, I know that you need to get to a meeting, but before you go to the meeting, any events coming up that that are related to this topic that you want to highlight before we end our time with you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll probably run into Carol maybe in a few weeks on January. This is January. How can I forget? January 22nd is the National March for Life in Washington, D.C. We're also going to be at the West Coast March for Life as well. So there's a lot of opportunities there. And usually in most any urban area of any significant size, they have a local, almost all the state capitals, I think, have marches for life. So it's a chance for you to be visible and make your voice heard to your legislators and in your community and gain support and encouragement from your brothers and sisters that feel strongly about this issue as well.
Absolutely. And we can find out more information about that on the lcms.org website.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you, Maggie Carner, for spending some time with us in the studio. I know that you have a meeting to get to, so you can make these things happen. We appreciate all the work that you do.
Thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you soon, Carol.
Thanks, Maggie. I'm looking forward to it, too.
Now, Carol, tell us a little bit more about the National Right to Life Committee and your work on the committee. What do you, as president, what are the responsibilities that you hold? What are the things that lie ahead in the coming year for you?
One of my biggest responsibilities, and something that I still occasionally struggle with, is that I have to do interviews. I love shows like this because, you know, it's a friendly host, a friendly audience. But there are some times when reporters try to do a gotcha, or they have dug up some information that I'm not familiar with. And every time I have to do an interview, I just think, oh, God, please let the right words come out of my mouth. not that I am the face of National Right to Life, because we are, like I said, 3,000 chapters with wonderful people all over the country. But I do a lot of meetings, a lot of the interviews, the press releases, press conferences, that kind of public aspect, I guess.
Sure.
I do a lot of public speaking, and we also have a large board of directors. We have one representative from every state.
Wow.
We have a state organization, so they all send one person to our board of directors, and I work with them, We have staff in our office that works with the state groups as well. But to see what their needs are and to, just keep kind of a cohesive message around the country among all of our groups, so that we all are focused on the same thing and kind of working on the same things so that we can be effective.
How does the NRLC, how does National Right to Life Committee carry out its work? I know that there are a number of areas. What are the main things, the main ways that you go about getting out the message?
We kind of work in three different areas. First, obviously, is education. We need people to understand that the unborn child is a human being from the moment of conception, and that human being needs to be protected because he or she is the most defenseless person, because they can't defend themselves. They're little and hidden. We do educational things. We've got certainly our website. We use the social media, Facebook and Twitter. Our chapters will do speaking events, either bringing in a speaker and inviting people from the community to come and listen to that speaker, or many of them have their own speakers bureau where they will have a couple of people in the chapter who are able to go out to churches, community organizations, schools, if the schools will allow them in, to talk about the issues of life. Our chapters have booths at county and state fairs, putting out literature, information, just trying to make sure people understand that more than 1 million babies are being killed in this country every year, and if they're at all concerned about it, they need to get involved and do something.
So education sounds like a key way of getting the word out and a lot of the work that you're doing. That's quite a task in itself. Does it take a lot of laborers, a lot of volunteers?
It really does. Part of the problem in this country is apathy. People just don't care. They don't want to get involved. So along with educating them, you know, you have to kind of make them understand that this is really the biggest civil rights battle of our time, and they really need to care. And hopefully that care will then motivate them to get involved or to speak up, even if it is something as, I don't want to say as simple, but just talking to a neighbor or a coworker and trying to pass information along to them. Working with a pregnant woman so that she realizes that killing her baby is not going to be the best solution for her. There's a lot to, not only are we fighting those who think abortion should be legal and these unborn children are just a nuisance that should be, gotten rid of, we need to reach out to people and try to convince them that they need to get involved.
Hmm. So education is one of those key three things that the National Right to Life Committee does. What are the other two?
Legislation. A lot of the legislation that is being passed in the states, whether it is the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, saying that once an unborn child can feel pain, which is about 20 weeks after after fertilization, abortion is not going to be allowed. That's currently in effect in 10 states. That's actually been our model legislation that our state groups have been able to pass in their states. We've been working on legislation to ban webcam abortions. People are just shocked when I tell them that an abortionist can sit in his office in one city and talk to a woman, maybe in a Planned Parenthood center in another city, maybe even in another state. He'll talk to her for a few minutes, and then he can push a button on the drawer on his computer that will open the drawer in the room where the woman is sitting, and that drawer will contain the two-drug chemical cocktail that will kill her unborn baby. And he'll tell her to take the first pill while he can even see her on the screen. They're talking via computer. And she'll take one pill, and that will be the pill that will kill her baby. And then he will say, okay, go home, and in a day or two, then take the second pill. And that pill will expel the dead baby from the uterus. But many times, she'll go to the bathroom and the baby will drop into the toilet. So our states are saying, no, wait a minute. At least the abortionist has to be in the same room as the woman. Because this could actually, you could have one or two abortionists in the country killing babies all over the country just by prescribing this chemical cocktail. So we've been working on legislation like that, encouraging states to say that a woman should be able to see an ultrasound of her unborn baby before she gets the abortion. So we're working on a lot of ways that, one, will protect women and their babies, and also using that legislation, again, as an educational tool.
Mm-hmm.
So that the people can understand what the current situation is and why we need legislation to stop some of this.
I was not aware of the web-based abortion. That's just horrific.
It really is. The chemical cocktail, it's often called RU486, it's a drug, is very dangerous for women. Several women that have used that process have died in this country. It can cause severe hemorrhaging. They may end up in the emergency room of the hospital, but the local doctor has no clue as to what is wrong with her because the abortionist is a couple hundred miles away. It's a very dangerous process, and yet that is happening in some of our states.
It's just frightening.
Yes, it is.
Wow. So
somehow our country has evolved, not our entire country,
yeah,
but there are some who think the unborn child must be destroyed at all cost, and if that means the woman's life or health is in danger, they kind of look the other way, because as long as the baby dies, that was the final result, and they don't really care about the woman and what she is going through in the meantime.
Is there a lot of money involved? That I'm just curious what the motivation is behind it.
Oh, absolutely. This is a multi-million dollar business. Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider in the country. Their annual budget is over $1 billion, and at least one-third of that, almost half of that, comes from federal, state, and local governments and grants.
Wow.
So our taxpayer dollars are being given to the nation's largest abortion provider. So yeah, there's a lot of money involved in this.
So obviously, it is important that the National Right to Life Committee work in legislation is important.
We also work on the federal level, working with Congress, but having a pro-abortion president and pro-abortion leadership in charge of the Senate, is really kind of tied our hands. Right now, we are working trying to get the bill passed in the Senate that would say once an unborn child can feel pain, abortion is no longer allowed, and that would affect the entire country. We don't know if we're going to get a vote on that this year or not, but we're certainly working on it.
Hmm. I mean, you said that was around 20 weeks, correct?
Yes.
And I remember, we have a newborn at home, and I remember that 20-week ultrasound, and it was just going from we had a 6-week ultrasound and then a 20-week. And I remember that the huge difference from 6 weeks to 20 weeks, you could certainly see. I mean, we could see the heartbeat earlier than 20 weeks,
sure.
But you could see a baby at 20 weeks. And
oh yeah, the baby is completely developed, and the capability to feel pain is there. And what's kind of astonishing is if we hurt ourselves, cut our finger, stub our toe, there are responses physically in our body that will, go to try to numb that pain. That response has not been developed yet in the unborn child at about that 20-week post-fertilization age. So he or she can feel pain, but the response to, try to numb that pain isn't developed yet.
Wow.
So the abortion is, actually more painful because there's no response to say, stop that pain.
Mm-hmm. So education, legislation, what is the third means?
The dreaded word of politics. We try to pass legislation to protect unborn children and to protect their mothers, but in order to do that, we have to have pro-life men and women sitting in office.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just sit back and say, elect whoever you want to, and then come in and ask them to pass the pro-life legislation, because you're only going to pass pro-life laws if you elect pro-life candidates. So we work on that. National Right to Life itself works to elect pro-life men and women to Congress as well as the presidency, and sometimes we're able to make that difference. Our state groups work with their state legislators, attorneys general, governor, other positions in the state that can impact pro-life laws in our country.
So education, legislation, political activity, you're busy folks.
yeah, we are. there are certainly never a time when we have to, sit and twiddle our thumbs because we can't think of anything to do.
Right. Yeah. You're always staying busy.
Mm-hmm.
And with the marches coming up very soon, right around the corner, I would say that this is probably one of the busier times of the year for you, I gather, huh?
It is. January is a time to try to reach out. Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton were the Supreme Court decisions that were handed down on January 22nd, 1973. So that is why January, especially the 22nd, is kind of a focal point for the pro-life movement. We want to try to remember that, this is the anniversary of the mm-hmm. Supreme Court decision that has resulted in, 56 million unborn children being killed by abortion in our country.
Absolutely. Well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our conversation. We're talking with Carol Tobias, president of the National Right to Life Committee, and we'll continue talking about the work that they're doing. So stick around. We've got more to talk about right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Every January 22nd, pro-lifers throughout the nation and around the globe gather in Washington, D.C. They observe the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortion throughout pregnancy. Over 100,000 pro-life marchers as a massive living witness to the opposition of abortion. Prayer is an important tool to bring an end to the killing of unborn babies, so the morning of the march, we'll gather in Constitution Hall near the White House for the National Memorial for the Preborn and their mothers and fathers. This interdenominational service will be a beautiful time of preaching and prayer for the end of abortion. If you'll be in the D.C. area, please join me. Visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org for all the details. I hope to see you there.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Andy Bates. I invite you to join me for His Time. We share the daily readings from the Word of God and check in with regular guests.
Good morning, Andy. How are we doing?
We also chat with special guests.
Good morning, Brother Andy.
A guest pastor joins us to study the daily New Testament reading.
Hey, good morning. How are y'all doing?
Finally, we join together in morning prayer. Begin your day with His Time, 7:15 to 9:30 each weekday morning on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Have you ever thought about becoming a Worldwide KFUO Day sponsor? There are plenty of reasons to do so. Perhaps a birthday, an anniversary, celebration of a baptism, confirmation, graduation, any event. It's easy. Just call Mary or Joni at 1-800-844-0524. That's 800-844-0524 and become a Worldwide KFUO Day sponsor today.
Looking for a career with a Fortune 500 organization where you can bring your values to work? Look no further than Thrivent Financial, a faith-based membership financial services organization, helping members be wise with money and inspiring them to live generously. As a not-for-profit organization, we give back millions of dollars to the causes our members care about. At Thrivent, you'll find a meaningful career, making a difference for others and your community. To learn more about our financial representative opportunities, visit thrivent.com.
A South Dakota lawmaker who also is a pastor hopes to repeal his state's death penalty in the legislative session that's getting underway. Church at the Gate pastor Steve Hickey of Sioux Falls previously supported capital punishment, but says he changed his mind after finding that in the Bible,
even God relents
instead of executing his righteous judgment. In a sermon at his church last summer, Hickey said many offenses were punishable by death in the Old Testament.
God put forth a retributive justice system that was insufficient, and he himself relented multiple times until he finally said, all right, one more can die for the evil in everyone.
Hickey said Jesus' crucifixion opened the way for a switch from retributive to restorative justice. Hickey has said the repeal he proposes would apply only to future cases, but his bill faces long odds in a legislature that has consistently supported the death penalty. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Tuesday, January 14th, and we are talking with Carol Tobias, president of the National Right to Life Committee. And before we went to break, Carol, you were talking about the three different ways that the NRLC carries out its work through education, legislation, and political activity. What are the very issues that that the National Right to Life Committee addresses in all this work? I know we've talked about abortion, but are there other issues regarding life that are important that the committee addresses?
There are. Certainly besides abortion, we have been active in legislation to protect babies who are born with some disability. They might have Down syndrome and some other maybe a swallowing problem, and the doctors will say, well, you know, this baby isn't going to have a great life, so, you know, let's just, basically they say we're not going to treat the baby, which means they don't give the baby food or water, and they end up starving to death. This was a much bigger problem maybe 20 years ago, and we actually got Congress to pass a law that made it illegal to deny medical treatment to a baby because that baby has, you know, a disability, whether it be you know, physical or mental. But we do still have a problem in this country of people saying, well, if the baby's going to have Down syndrome, then, you know, get an abortion. So we're trying to restore respect for any human life, even, you know, if the baby is has, you know, some disability. We are involved definitely in the euthanasia aspect. We have older people in our nursing homes who are being starved to death. You know, certainly not those who are competent and can get up and walk around. But if they are in a vegetative state or maybe failing, and actually the bigger problem is people who maybe were in an accident or had something, you know, something occur, that they are in a vegetative state, so they're not walking, not talking, but they're certainly alive. Our courts have pretty much decided, as well as unfortunately many in the medical community, decided that food and water is medical treatment, and it can be withheld or denied. And unfortunately, we do have some people in this country that die from starvation. We also are involved in fighting Obamacare. Certainly that legislation is going to promote abortion. We're going to have to be subsidizing it through our taxpayer dollars. But it also is going to ration health care. The system is set up so that a doctor and a patient can decide, you know, what medical treatment is going to be best for that patient's health or best to preserve his or her life. And yet if the National Independent Payment Advisory Board, which is set up through Obamacare, would determine that, you know, maybe it's going to say something like people over 75 can no longer have a knee replacement surgery, or we can no longer do any kind of heart surgery. If a doctor would determine that that's the best case for his doctor or his patient, but it goes against the standards set up by the Independent Payment Advisory Board, the treatment will be denied, even if the person has the money and is willing to pay for it. So we're concerned that we're going to start seeing rationing of health care in order to save dollars, and only the healthy are going to survive.
And it's it's placing it's placing a value or a price on life. It's determining it's kind of playing God, determining whose life is valuable and whose isn't.
Absolutely. And it will be the healthy and probably the young that would survive. Once you start getting older, more frail, it's going to be easier for the government to just say it's not worth the resources that it would take to prolong your life.
That's kind of frightening.
And we also get involved in assisted suicide. There are three states in the country that have legalized assisted suicide so that doctors can prescribe lethal doses of medication to their patients. Montana has a court case that has kind of left everyone in limbo. No one is quite sure what the law is there. And unfortunately, in New Mexico, just yesterday, a judge determined that doctors can provide lethal doses of medicine to their patients. So we're starting to see, again, on the other end of life, and that's actually a tougher case. You know, yes, human life is precious. All life has dignity. But in the mindset of a lot of people, well, but if they're older, if they're sick, they've lived their life, it's not quite like the unborn child who has, you know, this wonderful future ahead of him. So we're trying to build, you know, a theme of all life is, well, not trying to build, you know, we have a theme, all life is precious, and it doesn't matter the physical or mental condition of that life.
It sounds like a lot of these issues are related to our freedoms. What do these issues and what does your work have to do with religious freedom in our country?
We've been involved with the HHS mandate, which I think everyone is pretty familiar with, where the federal government is telling religious institutions that they have to provide contraceptives, even if the contraceptive might be an abortifacient. And, you know, so we've gotten somewhat involved in that. Although we don't do the court cases.
Sure.
You know, the country right now has had several different court cases. I think the Supreme Court is going to have to deal with this because federal courts around the country are coming up with different positions as to whether or not religious liberty is to be protected. It's just something I guess we'll have to wait out and wait and see.
Absolutely. How, being faith and family, the faith and family program, obviously life is a family issue. How so when it comes to the work of the National Right to Life Committee? What does this have to do with families?
Most of our work, as I said, even though we are involved certainly in euthanasia and rationing, most of our work does deal with abortion. And abortion can tear families apart. About half of the states in this country, some of them are the ones with the heavier, you know, bigger populations, do not require parents to be notified or to have to be involved if their minor daughter is pregnant and seeking an abortion. A 15-year-old girl can go to the abortionist and kill her baby, and her parents don't know anything about it. You know, she can't go to her school and get an aspirin. She can't get her ears pierced, but she can kill her baby, their grandchild. And then they have to deal with the after effect, because most girls are not going to do that and just walk away scot-free and, you know, never look back, that it doesn't change their lives. Maggie had mentioned earlier some of the women and how they suffer for years after they have had the abortion. Some of it is going to be physical, but much of it is psychological and emotional. You know, a woman is driving down the street and she sees kids playing on a playground or in a schoolyard, and she's thinking, my baby would be 7 years old now and out there playing with them.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that really hangs on, you know, to the women. I had one man in Oregon not too long ago tell me that abortion almost destroyed his marriage. He and his wife were young. She was pregnant, and apparently they didn't talk. He assumed that she would want an abortion, and in order to be a supportive husband, he told her that if she wants an abortion, he would support her in that decision. What she heard was, I want you to get an abortion. So she did. And he said for 30 years, their marriage struggled, and they were determined that they were going to, you know, make this marriage work. And yet she told him many, many years later that it was the abortion that was causing the problem, because she didn't want the abortion, but she thought he did. And he was crying when he told me. He said, we would have a child now who is about 30, and we would probably have grandchildren. You know, this is something that can tear apart a family in so many ways that people don't realize. The men in this country cannot prevent the death of their own child. And that can affect them, because they're thinking, I would have a, you know, son or daughter who is now 14, but I couldn't stop him. And that makes them feel weak and helpless and angry. There are just so many ways that families are torn apart by the death of one child.
For a moment, let me bring in the perspective of the opposing view. You know, a woman in crisis, a teenager, or a woman of any age, really, who has a pregnancy they weren't planning for, they weren't prepared for. They consider themselves in crisis because they don't know what to do next. They're not ready to raise a child. Abortion is presented as a solution, because the parent can't raise the child, or the mother can't raise the child, can't afford to, doesn't have the support or the resources to raise the child. So in their eyes, the easy solution is an abortion. And all of those pro-life people who are saying that we need to you know, have these children to deliver them. They're not considering the fact that we already have plenty of poverty in this country, and that child is just going to live in poverty. You know, these are some of the perspectives and arguments that I've heard. What's your response to that? What are the solutions for a woman in crisis? If this, you know, if we don't want all these babies being killed, then we need to step up to the plate and do something, right, to help out. We need to put up the dollars, right?
Absolutely. We need to reach out to the women, and I'm so proud of the pro-life movement for their response in coming through with pregnancy resource centers, abortion hotlines. Women in this country can get help to go through the pregnancy. I can't afford this because that means new clothes. You have to get maternity clothes. You have to get baby clothes. You have to get, diapers, and there's medical care. Pregnancy resource centers are all over this country, and for someone who might be in a rural area and they say, I don't know about that, then there are abortion hotlines that they can call and get help. And the pro-life community is going to respond. Churches are going to respond. A woman can get medical care because the resource centers have set up agreements with medical personnel in the area to help her so that she can get the prenatal care that she needs. If a woman needs a place to stay, pro-lifers are going to open their homes so that she can stay with them during this time. If they want to keep the baby, many of the resource centers are set up so that they can help her with parenting classes, and some of them will even help further the education or work with some place to kind of help train them to get a career. But if a woman really does not want the baby, she is too young, her parents are saying, look, you need to move on with your life, then I would urge them to really consider adoption. There are so many families that want that baby. And, going through 9 months of having the child is going to be difficult. For some, it's going to be very embarrassing. They don't want their pastor or their neighbors or family members to know that, maybe this is a young girl who was doing something she shouldn't have. But adoption is certainly an option. You go through 9 months of what might be some uncomfortable times, but then the child lives, and yes, the mother can go on and do other things in her life or with her life. But if she has the abortion, she spends the rest of her life wondering about that baby and quite frankly, feeling guilty. And as Maggie was mentioning earlier, wondering if they can ever be forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that abortion. I know one young woman who was pregnant 4 times in a very short amount of time. She had a baby and released the baby for adoption. She had a miscarriage. She carried the pregnancy to term and kept her son. And her 4th pregnancy, she had the abortion. And she was crying as she told me that of all those pregnancies, the one she would love to do over was the abortion, because that is the one that affected her the most and that she carries with her and she knew she was going to carry that for the rest of her life, even though she knew God's forgiveness and she knew that she can move on. She is not going to forget that she killed her baby. So I would just encourage anybody to help the pregnancy resource centers in your area with funding, with volunteers. Set up a baby shower and have people from the church bring together baby clothes, diapers, whatever it might be needed.
Sure.
To help out so that, I'm kind of rambling.
Oh no, you're right on topic.
The pro-life movement is the movement of love. We have people that are reaching out and doing all kinds of things, whether it's education, legislation, political action, the pregnancy resource centers. Working to make a difference for many of them, it's helping people that they will never meet.
Mm-hmm.
Unborn children are alive because of legislation that has been passed. We aren't expecting those babies to come back and say, hey, thank you for what you did. Pregnancy resource centers and the people that are opening their homes to these pregnant women, they're all doing it because of love. This is the movement of love, and I would encourage your listeners to find out if they've got a few minutes that they can help with something, You know, all the pro-life movement, all the groups, all work on donations. If there's a few extra dollars, you know, certainly don't take money away from your church or from your missions. You know, but if you've got a few extra dollars, then help the pro-life groups in your area. Everybody is doing this because they want to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
We're not getting anything out of it other than, you know, the belief, at least for me, that I am doing what God wants me to do.
Well, all week long, we've been talking about, the fifth commandment, you shall not murder. What does this mean? And obviously, we know murdering is killing someone arbitrarily with killing in vain. God, the explanation is we should fear and love God so that we do not hurt or harm our neighbor in his body, but help and support him in every physical need. And that sounds like exactly what you're setting out to do, is helping our neighbors, helping neighbors in their physical needs, so that life is respected and supported and cared for. And I'm sure you encounter many people in your vocation, in the work that you do with the National Right to Life Committee. I'm sure that you have probably story upon story. With just about a little over 5 minutes left, Carol, do you have any stories or anything that you'd like to share with us today?
I was talking to one woman who said that she had been very active in her church pro-life group. And, they had been doing different projects and activities. And one time, so they were sitting around talking, and she was kind of surprised because she was hearing what she thought were very judgmental comments about, you know, wondering about these women who, you know, get an abortion and they kill their babies and, you know, don't they know what they're doing? And she said, I just kind of looked at him and said, you know, it's been a few years, but I had an abortion. And she had an absolute stunned silence that they did not know how to respond. This woman that they had been, you know, working with and had known for a long time is finally, you know, telling them something. And that really kind of struck me, that our attitude in the way we respond to people makes such a difference. There are women that, with 56 million abortions in this country over the past 41 years, now it's not 56 million women, because unfortunately many women get multiple abortions. But this has permeated our society so that women who have had abortions are in our churches, they are in our workplace, they're our neighbors, they are in our families. And we cannot sit in judgment with them. Abortion is a sin, but there are a lot of sins.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not seen a list yet where God has said, this is the most important, this one isn't quite as important, it doesn't really matter. We are all sinners. And our attitude toward women who have had abortions can make a difference on whether or not they feel like they can receive God's love. So I would encourage the listeners to kind of make an attitude check. How do they respond to coworkers who talk about abortion? What is their attitude toward the women who have had an abortion? This is the biggest secret in the country, because after 41 years, 56 million abortions, women who have had abortions generally still do not talk about it. This is not the conversation at the dinner table very often.
Sure.
If a woman is at work and she's going to take the day off, she might say, I'm going to be gone tomorrow because I'm getting my gallbladder removed, or I'm going to have a root canal. They don't say, I'm taking tomorrow off because I am going to get an abortion. It is still not talked about, which I think is good in that people still know that killing unborn babies is wrong. But our attitude has to be that of love and understanding, so that a woman who has had an abortion can come and talk to us and unburden herself if she needs to and look for help. If we're the movement of love, we need to carry that love out through all aspects of our life and, you know, make that attitude on abortion one of love, not judgment or condemnation.
Sure, it's really hard to get your message across when it appears that you are being judgmental or judging, or in today's words, in today's pop culture words, I believe the word is hater. You know, if you're considered a hater, then nobody's really going to listen to you, and you're not going to get the message across.
That's right.
That all life is important and valued. Carol, what are the two things I'd like to cover in just the next few minutes that we've got left, about a little over 3 minutes left? One, resources that our listeners can go to. I know that obviously LCMS Life and Health that we talked with Maggie earlier, and the National Right to Life Committee website, but other resources that they can connect to, and then also upcoming events that we might want to check out as well.
Okay. Our website is nrlc.org. And I would, if they want to get involved or help a local pregnancy resource center, I think just Google resource centers, pregnancy centers, pregnancy help. You can easily find information about the places in your community that are helping the women. Events coming up in January, pretty much every state is going to have some event to recognize the anniversary of Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. It might mean a trip to your state capital, or it might mean a couple blocks down the street wherever some group is meeting. I would encourage you to look for that as well. And those are going to be pretty well. Again, the internet is the best way to find out, or ask your pastor if he is getting any information. And if not, then maybe encourage him to let people know what's happening, and maybe someone in the church can find out and get that information out as well.
Sure. Very good. Very good. Well, Carol, it's great to talk with you. I hope that we can continue to stay in touch and get updates from you as well. I know that now that you're going to be also on the board with Maggie, that I'm sure that we'll hear more from what's going on in LCMS Life and Health Ministries as well. So I pray that all goes well for you this year in your service as president of the National Right to Life Committee. And we really appreciate your time today, taking some time to talk with us here on Faith and Family.
It has been my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Hopefully it wasn't that that hard, grilling interview that you were anticipating.
I wish all interviews were like this. No, this would be great.
I think we covered the important topics, the important issues, and I think, we've spent some time talking about those important issues, but yeah, it didn't have to make you too uncomfortable.
No, this really was pretty easy. I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Thanks so much, Carol. Take care, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Coming up in the next Faith and Family, we'll continue talking about the Fifth Commandment. Later on this week, we'll talk about caring for the elderly, adoption, and foster care, all coming up on Faith and Family this week. So I hope that you can join us for those conversations as well this week, folks. Coming up next, Moments of Assurance right here on listener-supported Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.